And now, the talk continues with the Mark Shander Show on Arizona's News Talk 1260 and 96.1 FM. Once again, here's your host, Mark Shander.
28 minutes till the top of the hour on Arizona News Talk 1260 and 96.1 FM. Very short break, so I'm not accustomed to that. Vern, you're probably not accustomed to that either. But we're very thankful for them because it means we get to chat more. And yeah. Melissa, it's been great having you here, as a matter of fact. So thank you very, very much. And you brought up something that I didn't want to get too much into at the time, but as far as personal needs are concerned, back when Vern was first getting into the military, you probably didn't have the same consideration for circumstances because there weren't that many women that were actually at the same place you were on the base ready to fight.
That's right.
And that since then has become an issue. And if you think about how long we have had women in equal positions, it's just, I don't want to say stupid, but it's just amazing when you think about, and this, I don't want this to be taken out of context, but the fact that it's only been, if you think about it, 250 years since anything regarding a country like this has even been thought about to the point where they've taken action. Yeah. And we're not that far from even things like slavery.
Yeah.
I mean, if we look at human rights issues and in general, it's just amazing. And what we're talking about really is getting back to the military part. There was no consideration for whether or not somebody was, had a personal need to go to the restroom for any reason, because there weren't people who needed the restroom that often at that time or cyclical.
Yeah, everything was so regulated. I mean, and then I guess it's the best way to say it. I mean, you either, in whatever manner, it was, very, very regulated, and you could not deviate. Now, when you're talking about a little bit about responsibilities and how we looked at it, vis-a-vis our rank in service. Well, I'm one of those who started out in basic training as an infantryman and went to advanced infantry training. Then I went to officer candidate school.
Oh, okay.
And then I had my platoon and infantry platoon in Vietnam. So the different levels of how you respond to receiving and giving orders, I've had that, I don't know what you want to call it, privilege or whatever, but I've had that experience of being the, at times you feel like the lowest person on the totem pole.
Oh, yeah.
And at times, even as an officer, I felt as like the lowest person on the totem pole, because the military hierarchy want to maintain discipline, and one way to maintain discipline is that you respect. And again, here's a question for you, Melissa. Did they teach you the following statement? You respect the uniform and not the person.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, right. And that's a very, very true statement.
I've heard that before. How does that apply to you, Melissa?
How it applied to me is, I'm going to put this the right way. So I've had some good sergeants and I've had some really bad sergeants.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the line, it doesn't matter if they're good or if they're a good or decent person. He's a sergeant and he's in charge of me, so right. I have to do what he says.
That's right. So, they drill into you that based upon what is on your sleeve or on your collar, as an officer from the collar and the sleeves in the enlisted ranks, regardless of the person on the inside, you are saluting or following the orders of that person who has a higher rank than you, and you better do it.
Yeah.
So there's a potential now, and I'm sure this is, and I know for a fact this is, I'm not trying to kind of belittle it, but there's a huge potential for abuse when it comes to males.
Enormous.
With females.
Absolutely.
As somebody that they're responsible for, directly responsible for.
I've got to tell you, Melissa will probably reach over here and hit me, and if you're more than,
I'm glad you moved
like
over
it,
from that way.
You moved a little closer to me. Thank you for that.
But that's one of the things that really upset me when they started incorporating more and more females into the military and closer to the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, when I was in, the females were basically nurses or clerks.
Yeah.
Okay, supply clerks, administrative clerks, etc. Now, I mean, you see, the strangest part of our Department of Defense is she cannot have an MOS that is a combat MOS.
What is an MOS for people who are just listening?
This is basically your military job. Okay. Is an easy way to say it. Like my MOS was when I joined 91 Bravo, which was actually a combat medic when I joined, but not really a combat medic. Yeah. They changed it to medical specialist the next year.
Exactly. Because of the laws. You can't take a female and you cannot put them, you are not supposed to put them in a MOS that puts you in a combat scenario. Now here's the odd part. And the National Guard, using National Guard as an example, National Guard has a lot of female transportation truck drivers. Now, where do those trucks go? They go to the front lines carrying ammunition, taking troops into the front line, taking resupply, whatever it may be. They are in as much of a danger zone as any of the 11 Bravos in the back of the truck. And yeah, but that's okay. But you can't give her.
I can't be
an.
I can't be an infantryman. But as a medic, I was out on the front lines. I was in the convoys, just like all the boys.
Yeah.
So
exactly. And you know, for me, I had, this is a part where I don't want you to reach over and hit me. I would have hated to have the responsibility of looking out for your well-being, in addition to the combat missions that we were on in Vietnam. And being concerned about both the mission and you. Now, I'm raised in a different era.
No, and I would actually agree with that statement. The one thing, and I, of course, I wasn't alive for Vietnam. But the one thing that I've...
You weren't even a gleam in your parents' eyes.
No, I wasn't around yet. But the one thing that I've noticed in my own experience and then talking with people that were in Vietnam is that it's definitely a different kind of war going on over there. We are at the front line for doing something as simple as, you know, just being a truck driver. I mean, you have to be there. And unless you make pretty much all the jobs, not female, you're going to be on the front lines. Our cooks were on the front lines. Mm-hmm. Everybody was. Because, I mean, we landed in Kuwait and then basically convoyed from Kuwait all the way up to northern Iraq. And the entire unit went, you know. So it's not just, everybody's going to be at the front lines. So,
how long a trip was that?
Okay, so I actually didn't make that trip because I came later, but I know my unit did. So, I know it was like a week.
And during, I'm going to ask you this, Vern, during that, because you have the officer training and everything, during that particular type of trip, when you know for a fact that your cargo might be, and this might be just the machoism, you know, coming through as I ask this question, but you know that your cargo is a little more precious than it might otherwise be, and you want to protect it a little more, what do you do to make sure that that group of people arrive where they're supposed to for a trip that's a week away in countries that are not necessarily loaded with the most friendly, completely friendly people? There's ones that are, but there's also a lot that are not.
Well, again, I need to qualify something before I give you an answer. My whole mission when I was in Vietnam was what they called search and destroy. Can't use those words and phrases anymore. Yeah. But I was in search and destroy, and I was in what was called a free kill zone. Which basically meant if it moved, you shot it, killed it. Didn't make any difference who it was, what it was, male, female, child, adult, because we were in a heavy jungle area of Vietnam, right along the Cambodian-Laotian borders. So now to think about the mission, and my mission, every day I'd get my marching orders for my platoon. It'd either be a company size movement or a platoon size movement. And we didn't make any difference. My job was to sit and look at that map the night before and determine where the probability, most likelihood of running into an ambush was, and to make sure that I was aware of that throughout the entire hump for that day, to protect my men.
Yeah.
The mission was always paramount, but the men in my platoon were just about as close as the mission.
Can you tell me, without jeopardizing anybody who might be in that position today, where that intelligence you received came from? If the answer is no, then let's not have the discussion now.
It's just totally different today than in my day.
Yeah.
Okay. The intelligence issues came from experience. It's running into
speculation or fact?
No, pure speculation.
Okay. And that's different now, right, Melissa? Because a lot of the intelligence now is fact-based.
A lot of it's fact. A lot of it's, you know, comes from someone coming in and saying, hey, these guys down here are doing this, and then we would go check it out, that sort of thing. So, yeah, a lot of it's...
See, I worked in... my work, as I refer to it, was in a triple canopy jungle in Vietnam, and which means it was relatively dark, and it means that you couldn't walk off of the trail because you're trying to be as stealthy as possible, and you couldn't be out there with a machete as they show in some of these movies and chopping down and stuff. So you're on a trail, the same trail that the NVA and VC were using to go right up that hill. Mm-hmm. Well, you'd look on that map, that topical map that I would have, and I would see certain areas and movements and things on the trail, or the area that I was going, and say, this is a likely spot, this is a likely spot, this is a likely spot. And then it was up to me to make sure I knew where we were during that hump, during that day, and when we were coming close upon one of those high-intensity spots, I really had to make sure that everybody perked up. Now, I can tell you, it really wasn't a whole lot of different. We were all wound tight from early morning until time, well, 24 hours, 24/7, because we didn't, it's not like today's world, we didn't go back to a fob.
Yeah.
We dug a hole every night, put ourselves in that hole, or deep enough that we could crawl into it if we got hit that night. But we were in the jungle.
You lived in a foxhole.
We walked through the jungle. We lived in the jungle. We'd go out on 3-week missions.
No, not the same experience.
Not even close to the same for me.
We'd go out on 3-week missions. We would be resupplied every third day with sea rations and new uniforms.
But also the circumstances were different. You were in the middle of a war. And were you in the middle of a war at the same time, or were you just serving a period of time when there wasn't an active war that you were in the middle of?
No, I was.
I mean, I know the time period, but you...
Yeah, I mean, we went over in 2005, over to Iraq. You talk about Baghdad, still major, major war area. Up north where I was, it wasn't as active as a war. I mean, we still had issues. It was kind of more of a civil war, I feel at least. Mm-hmm. They were kind of attacking themselves, but in that fact, we did, you know, we got RPGs coming in pretty much every night onto our FOB and stuff. But at the end of my night, when I was done with my job for the day, I went back to, they call it a chew, and basically think of like a small Connex box with an air conditioning and a door. Right. So that's, and, you know, a bed.
And, you know, I'm all for that, let me tell you.
Yeah, maybe we could compromise and just put a pillow in the foxhole?
The rucksack that I carried, I mean, we talked today about what the weight is of these infantrymen with all this. Back in my day, we had to carry everything, and we were carrying what's called rucksacks that were 70 and 80 pounds.
Yeah.
And that was enough, and you loaded as much ammunition in there and as little food and water as you could, you know, because the main thing was to want to stay alive.
Yeah.
And, that's the way it went.
Yeah, I know I've been telling you we're going to talk about basically the experience when you get out of the military, but really setting the stage for what it's like to be in, you guys just did, is tremendous. So when we get back, we are going to talk about what happened when you got out, what happened when you went to seek medical care, because actually you have to be able to make a transition to being, I hate to call it a regular Joe, but one of everybody else, and at least have somebody look at you to make sure that you're going to be okay.
I agree.
So you have to have a doctor. You just have to. So we're going to talk about the experience that you went through, how long that took, then, how long it takes today, and maybe what some of the challenges folks who are listening are experiencing, what they can do about it. When we get back on Arizona News Talk 1260, 96.1 FM, The Mark Shander Show, we'll be right back after this.